Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Cheaters Never Win. This week, we were live on location over at Bottle Mix for the second annual live podcast. Had a great turnout, had a great time. We had a live guest on the Dawn from Fathom Realty guest line. Shane Willis joins us to start off the podcast. We talk trade deadline. We talk a little bit about beer. Audio quality is about what you'd expect from doing this in the middle of one of Raleigh's premier bottle shops. But we hope you enjoy. And here is this week's live edition of Cheaters Never Win. That's right. Welcome to this week's live episode of Cheaters Never Win. Got Shane Willis on the Caniac underscore Realtor guest line this week. My name's Mike. Derek was at Bottle Mix with us as well this past Saturday. And we're still a proud part of the Sports Channel 8 Podcast Network. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This is the second annual non-inaugural 328 Cheaters Never Win podcast.
What? Why not?
I look forward to the third annual inaugural podcast.
The third annual inaugural.
That's the one I'm holding out for.
Kickoff podcast. Thank you guys for being here. Hey, can we get a round of applause for the good folks at Bottle Mist for letting them for supporting our little local hockey family and for having sweet, delicious beverages. Cheers to all of y'all.
Cheers.
Those of you who are on the internet listening, raise a glass for something, of something. Big show today, Derek.
Yes, absolutely.
You're here.
Yeah, look, I
want... Derek Gressler, everybody.
Yeah, so I'm here to talk about my time in the NHL, what it's like to be on the broadcast with Mike Maniscalco. No, actually, that's why you're here, Shane.
That's so, right. I would have loved to hear your story, though. It might have been a short show.
It would be.
for those of you who don't realize, Derek in a former life was Joey Mormina.
That's right.
Those of you who have been around long enough get that joke. Joey Mormina. No. Did you play with Joey Mormina?
No.
Do you remember Joey Mormina?
No.
He was about 6'7", and 6'6" of him was basically legs. He looked like a baby giraffe on skates. Yeah.
Quality player, though?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
No, doesn't ring a bell. You couldn't even lie? Couldn't even help the guy out a little bit?
No, I think Joey Mormina played in the 2003-2004 season when I think they started pulling tickets and you could join the Canes that night because it didn't matter anyway. So I think it was that year. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it was a rough year for Joey Mormina, but Shane Willis is going to be here.
It was probably the highlight of his career that he made the NHL, but a rough year for the guy because we think he skates like a baby giraffe.
Okay, so my beautiful wife used to work for the Charlotte Checkers. He went down to the Charlotte Checkers. Guess what he did for the Checkers? Still skated like a baby giraffe. So yeah, it was bad. Shane Willis, better skater.
Thank you. Thank you. That's my job now, is to teach young kids not to skate like baby giraffes. Really. My main role with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Main role with the Carolina Hurricanes. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Canes, 10-3-1 in their last 14. 3 points out of a playoff spot. So, Shane, tell us a little bit, what changes have you seen in the team from what was a November that was a Canes November? Since we kind of turned to December and January, this has somewhat been a different team.
Yeah, it really has. I think in January, this team started to hit stride, and my number one focus of why this team is where it is today, I go back to the forecheck, the aggressive speed that they play at, the time and space they take away, and then the great reads the defensemen are making on their pinches to continue to keep the puck in so these guys can stay on the forecheck. From there, I think it carries over into consistency. You find that confidence, and the consistency through January is what has really carried this team. And now as you move forward, the other thing I noticed last night, and you saw it a few times on that road trip and late in January, is that they can now build a game. Early in November, when this team got behind, there was no chance that they were going to be able to push the pace and play in the system and get back in the game. Now they have all bought in, and Rod Brindamore has convinced them, stay with the system, it's going to work. And I think you see that consistent pressure now. They get behind last night. The very next shift, they come out, they get right back to their system on the forecheck, they tie the game, and now they continue to build and take over and take the leads in games. I think that's the biggest difference. This team now has the confidence to play with that system and come from behind if needed, but again, a totally different team when they do get out to the lead early in a game.
So when you say that Brindamore has convinced them to stick with the system and that's what's going to work, how much of that is like really harking on the hockey skills in practice versus how much of it is reading the room, knowing, you know, who needs a kick in the pants versus who needs a pat on the back?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. I think that's what really makes a great coach, whether it's in the minor leagues, whether it's with youth or in the National Hockey League with Rod Brindamore. You have to know how each player responds, and each player is totally different in that locker room. And I think now that he knows that, he knows the guys that he can lean on and step on and kick a little bit, and the other guys, which we know with the youth today and these young players that are coming in, maybe didn't need a little bit more positive reinforcement to get them going. But overall, I love the word the players are using and the coach is using as far as a simple game. Mm-hmm. This team doesn't have three or four flashy, all-star type, razzle-dazzle players. They have that blue-collar mentality. They have the speed to play. They have skill, but they need to play at a north-south skill level. And when they get in on that and they stick with it, you can see them start to take over games. And when teams talk about it after game, they say this is a fast team. They don't give you any time and space. But when we do, that's when it opens the game up and teams take advantage of it.
All right, so let's fight.
Okay.
Mike, that's a bad idea.
I've only had one.
You said this team doesn't have a bunch of razzle-dazzle all-star players. But isn't...
He's right. We had one all-star player.
Well, you're only allowed to have one.
Right. I mean, when you're in Carolina, you're only allowed to have one. That's right.
This is true.
So, I mean, if you look at the way this team's set up, you've got Sebastian Aho, who is just doing work.
There's your one.
Lord's work.
How about the move last night when he hit the brakes, and I believe it was Eglin just took a spill because he couldn't keep up.
I mean, went full Top Gun.
What a move.
Hit the brakes and watch him fly by.
Every young player should be able to skate like Sebastian Aho.
Yes. Every player on the Carolina Hurricanes should be able to skate like Sebastian Aho.
We hope.
Yes. But you also look at the likes of, you know, Jacob Slavin, who is having, you know, continuing that. Dougie Hamilton, who is starting to hit a little bit of a stride. Justin Falk, I think some in this room would argue, is probably having one of the best seasons of his career.
Yes, I agree. Because I think, and that's the mindset, I think, when I talk about razzle-dazzle. I think even a guy like Dougie Hamilton, where his game has changed, is that now it's engraved in his head to do the small, simple defensive things first and create out of that. I think it's helped Dougie's game. And Justin's game has turned because he's watching and working so much harder in the defensive zone, playing that smart style game. He doesn't have as many goals as we always see Justin Falk have, but that attributes a little bit to the power play being a little bit off, not shooting as much from the top. But I think those are the style games, and that's how this team is going to win. When those two guys play a strong defensive game and allow the game to create offensively through our forwards, yes, they get their chances. Brett Pesce chipping in last night, and they chip in at key points. I think that's why this team is now successful. If those guys are going outside the box, trying to get their goals, Dougie Hamilton jumping up early in the season, and then we have those breakdowns, I think that is what has cost this team early in the season.
All right, you mentioned Brett Pesce, and Derek, I know you've got one, but this last year there was kind of a season ticket members, kind of coach's corner thing. Brindamore was still an assistant coach, and he came out there and he was talking a lot about the power play and what these guys are supposed to be doing. And he referred to Brett Pesce's shot every single time as just a muffin, right? So obviously, when you're the assistant coach and Rod's up there going, yeah, Falker's doing this, and you know, Brett's shooting it at about 12 miles an hour directly into the goalie's chest, literally saying this in front of season ticket members, and now he's the head coach. And you're trying to bring the best out of these guys, and it's a little bit different feel in the room. So can you maybe, as someone who played in the NHL and saw different coaches throughout your career, what's some of the little things that Rod's doing on the ice that is leading to success, but maybe what's some of the stuff you think Rod's doing off the ice that's building this much more cohesive team than maybe we've seen in years?
Well, I think the number one thing that, if anyone, everyone in this room has met Rod before, is the amount of energy he brings when he's talking about hockey, the intensity he still brings. The one press conference I remember this year when he said, I wanted to dress. I could just see him in his office pacing, going, where are my skates? I'm going to lose it. I want to get out there and help. And I think players react to that, and they know how much passion he has and what he brings each and every day. So I think they try and emulate that work ethic that he has. He has it in practice. You can see him when he's coaching and teaching. He's pushing hard. But I think the main thing that he has when he brings it off the ice, he still has enough laid-back mentality to know exactly what each guy's feeling in that room. Being an ex-player, he knows today how they're feeling in their bodies, what they need to see. He knows when he can push and when he can. I think that's the biggest thing, is that a head coach can relate to exactly what each guy in that room is going through. And I think he's used that very effectively this year. And I think his assistant coaches have done a great job on their side of things, still relating to the players, being that avenue when things are going wrong.
Is there a chance that anybody can take him on a stationary bike yet?
No chance. No chance. I don't. It would be a good test for an active player to say, I want to race and push and see. Because I know the new bike test they brought in this summer, which I tried. I'm just going to say I completed it. Don't write down my score, please, once I complete. But that he did the test and would probably rank, I don't want to give it any. It's probably in the top five, I would say. I don't know his exact score, but I'm going to predict he was in the top five of the players on the team right now.
Yeah. The stories of him taking a stationary bike in the back of his truck to go on vacation. You're supposed to be taking time away, but you can't. He can't quit the workouts.
No, and I think that's part of who he is and why he gets so much respect in the room. I think he's the guy. He's going to be the first guy there. He gets his workout in. And I think the young players have to see that, and they need to see that when they step inside that room, it's time to go to work, mm-hmm. and when you leave, that's the time you rest and relax. And I know when Rod leaves as a coach now, they watch so much video, there's so much time put in to watching other teams and prepping for games. But I know when he walks out, then his main focus, are his kids. Where are they at? He stayed back in Vancouver to be able to see Skyler and spend time with him, and he's so very focused and puts the things in the right order, and it's a big reason why he's a success.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is with this team and who's in the room, who's on the ice, one notable name that's not on the ice is Jordan Staal. And the fact that Rod said earlier this week that he hopes to have him back this season was probably not what anybody wanted to hear, both as fans and people who are concerned for his health. What sort of things, is it wrong to start to wonder if Jordan Staal is going to play again? Concussion issues, obviously, I don't need to tell you, are something that it's hard to figure out. It's not like a broken ankle where it's X number of weeks recovery time, then rehab, then you're set. What sort of things might he be going through, and is there any, serious long-term concern for his ability to play again in the NHL?
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone in the organization, or I'm sure especially Jordan Staal being the player, that is in his mindset thinking, I may never play again. Right now, his main focus is making sure he feels better on a consistent basis. I think that's a big thing they're finding now with concussions, is that guys can only tell you they have a few good days, then they kind of relapse back to day one. I think that's the concern with Jordan Staal right now, is that the turn hasn't started to happen yet. It's been a long time. So I think when they say, Rod Brindamore talked about how important this guy is to not only the locker room, but the way he was playing before the injury. And I think the injury to me happened earlier than it was reported. Mm-hmm. And as a player, it's hard. Something's going on. You don't want to talk about it. You're playing well. And then it starts affecting your game. And unfortunately, that's probably when it's getting worse. So the number one thing, I think, is time for a guy like this, especially a guy who is a cornerstone of this franchise. He's signed long term. He's a great leader. He does everything he's asked on the ice. So the first thing, I think, is getting back to square one. Okay, when do you get healthy enough to start that protocol to get back on track? I think the focus is, number one, his health, which it should be. And number two, then you start looking at a date. Do we bring him back this year? Where are we sitting? Mm-hmm. You don't want to rush anything. I know it gets hard, especially when you're on that cusp of being in the playoffs or you're out and we need a guy, to not getting in this situation of rushing back. And I think the organization is doing a great job right now looking out for Jordan Staal and his best interests and taking the time they need to make sure he's healthy before even getting back to say, hey, let's go for a skate and see how you feel.
Yeah, so you mentioned playoffs. We're sitting here today. It is February 2nd, Carolina Hurricanes, 3 points out. And it seems like the Canes have been analytics darlings for the last four seasons. But we're finally starting to see the fruits of maybe some of those labors going into how do we change this team based upon the data that we see. Trade deadlines coming up 2.5 weeks from now. If you're sitting in a mock turtleneck on the fifth floor in a corner office and you're part of GM Voltron, what's the piece you're looking to add to this team to make sure we're playing the second week of April?
Well, I kind of thought about that when I was walking in here today. It's 55 degrees. It has a little bit of a smell of the playoffs out there.
Yeah.
We were talking about the playoffs
before
it came on the show. It was too warm for my mock turtleneck today, so I left it alone. But to me, the first thing I look at as far as you said, if you're adding a piece, in some way, could I still find that young, talented offensive piece that this team still needs? I think right now you're getting that depth scoring. You see a first line with Aho, Niederreiter, and Williams right now, but you have Teravainen who also can work in there. So you start building that offensive. You have the depth. To me, it's still a true natural goal scorer slash point guy. I think we're very solidified in the back end with six guys. But I think the bigger question is, what do you give up to get that piece?
Michael Ferland?
And there's pieces that people are calling about to the Carolina Hurricanes, I think for sure, that are valuable pieces. But I think the biggest thing to me is when you're looking at making a trade, I've never been a fan, and we could talk all day long about the rental players that haven't ever worked out for many, many teams, not necessarily the Carolina Hurricanes. So don't look at that. I think if I was talking with Don, and what I know what he's looking at is obviously analytic numbers on players that are out there that could help our team, but also who can help our team long term. Who is a guy that's 23, 24 to 27 that could be a Carolina Hurricane for a long time? And I think we're still building pieces to a very important puzzle. Jordan Martinook, signed, 2-year deal. Teravainen, 5-year deal. Building pieces that are going to be here long term, what can you add to continue to build the whole puzzle?
So as an employee of the Hurricanes, is it tampering if you name names of other players on other teams?
I don't know. I tell you what, downstairs in my office, I have made some epic trades in my day. None of them have gone through my email, though. It's weird.
What is your HF board's handle again?
Yeah.
So let's maybe switch from talking about the current Carolina Hurricanes to former Carolina Hurricanes on the ice. Shane Willis here with us
and
today.
Joey Mormina.
And Joey Mormina.
The giraffe, Joey Mormina.
A lot of people may not be aware of this, but you and Derek have been hockey teammates.
Really?
Yeah.
Shane's like, really? I played with that? This year, we were fortunate enough, I don't know why Sonny invited us, but we were invited to the Canes Media Day scrum, and part of that is a media ball hockey tournament.
See, I didn't understand when you should have said championship teammates. I would have clicked right in.
Congratulations.
There you go, yeah.
For the record, we were championship teammates the year before.
It's true.
If you would like to say, 2 years ago, Shane and I were on the championship team.
One of my trades did happen then.
thanks for coming, Shane Willis, everybody.
Man, this is getting good.
It's been good. Everything's falling apart. So for those of you who may not know, Shane was one of the preeminent wingers of the late 90s for the Carolina Hurricanes. One of the guys we thought was really just going to take everything off. But what we did not know is that Shane Willis should have always been a goaltender. Shane putting up in the media game, I think somewhere around a 900 save percentage, back-to-back seasons.
Which for the Canes is not bad.
No. All we need is league average goaltending, and you could win the media cup.
Many comments I can't say right now.
let's talk about the stuff that you can't really say, which is the other goaltender was Mike Maniscalco.
Yeah.
And Mike Maniscalco might have pulled everything. You, sir, on the other hand, just were there. So Tell us a little bit about kind of maybe how do you look at some of this stuff? As you're playing with goofballs like me and Derek and, you know, Joe Ovius and that type of thing, do you're like, yeah, let me take it easy and let Derek put one in, which he's never done. I have. I scored on Maniscalco, yes. But I don't know if that even really counts as a goal. I have to get that out there. Mike hates it when I mention it. But anyway, so how do you actually, as you kind of, how is it possible to dial back that competitive stuff when you're in that world that you grew up in for so long? How do you deal with that?
Well, I think we just go out now in any event we do, whether it be the ball hockey game that we play with the media, the alumni game. I think it's still the enjoyment of the game. I think there's always still that part of any athlete that wants to win and go out there. But I think it's just about having fun. We have such a great day that day. I love going out playing goalie. I haven't played goalie since back in the day after school. There'd be phone calls. We'd be all racing at the office to call our parents saying, we're going to this house to play street hockey. Pick me up later when it's dark. And we'd go up there and guys were playing goalies. And I think that's the biggest thing I remember is growing up playing goalie on the street, you know, using a tennis ball and just having fun with it. And it's so much fun to get out there with the media. The key is, as you said, to sit back and read the game. So as a goalie, I think it makes it easier for me to be able to read what's about to happen out there in the media game. It's easier to see the passes they're going to make. So I think that's what kind of helps me. And then overall, I don't go with the standard goaltender glove. I go with the baseball glove, a little old school, and that's what really makes the big saves for me.
I think Urbay tried that once, but they told him he couldn't do it.
Are you sure that's not what he had on his hand?
No.
entire career.
It was probably like a hockey glove stitched around a baseball glove with Urbay.
With a piece of oven mitt on it.
So when Mike asked you that question, I was thinking, because you were a hockey player, I was expecting a cliched answer, and I was very happy to hear that you didn't give one. But during the All-Star game, I forget who asked and who the question was asked to of, what's your favorite cliched answer to give if somebody's going to have you like talk about the game, whether it's pucks in deep or one shift at a time? What's your favorite hockey cliche answer?
What we used to use or what is right now out there?
Both.
What we used to use is, you know, we just got to really try and give 100% and, you know, it really is let things fall where they may kind of thing. Now it might be, is we're going to get to our game first. Yeah. I think that's the go-to.
Yeah, got to start on time.
And so.
Well, that started a few years ago, starting on time.
Yeah. Did it?
Yes. I think it did.
And so, as a player, do you give those answers because you just don't really feel like answering questions? Is it because you don't want to say something that somebody's going to talk to you about later? What's the driving force behind the fact that so many hockey players give such boring answers?
I think they're reserved. And it was funny because standing last night in the hallway before Mike and I do after 40 minutes or the bench warmers, I always stand there and listen to the guys do the interview and give the answer. And it's almost like the guys are still so focused on the game and they're thinking about what's going to happen next. They get the question, they give the standard answer instead of kind of breaking out of the shell, because so many of the guys are characters and mm-hmm. they just don't kind of let it out on TV. And talking with Tripp and John and Mike, sometimes you wish the guy would kind of come out of his shell a little bit more. Because after some of the interviews, I said to Mike, I said, I wish he would have said this, or I wish he would have said this. And I think it's just the focus they have on the game. They're trying to stay serious. They're trying to stay in the moment and not be joking or get pulled away in any way. So I think that's the biggest reason why guys give the answer. Some of the guys just give the answer because they don't like getting interviewed in the game. I can tell you some of them come out there and they're like, all right, let's go do this. Hurry up. I want to get back in the room.
Yeah, and we all saw if you have too much fun in interviews, Montreal will trade you to Nashville.
Well, there's probably a few other reasons that happened, but I don't think that's one guy who loves to come outside of his shell is PK Subban. Yeah. I think that's what makes him so attractive to fans and why they connect with him. And there, you don't see a lot of that in the NHL. I wish we had a few more guys that have the bounce out ability. I think Jordan Martinuk here is starting to do that. I mean. When they put him on the Jumbotron and he says, let's get her going, I think he has that and wants to get more into it. So I think maybe we could see that grow here in this locker room.
Yeah, no, it's I could think, you know, Pernell Carl, maybe Joe Thornton, but Joe's kind of earned the right to be a turkey if he wants to.
We're not talking about four goal celebrations.
No, we're not going full four goals.
No.
So let's hit for a little bit about the media. I think a lot of folks are really intrigued. The Carolina Hurricanes are very lucky. For years, we have had some of the best media in terms of radio, and our television team. So a big hand of applause for those. Forsland, Tripp, Mike, Shane, making up a great crew from there. What was your biggest hurdle that you had to overcome, kind of going from being behind the scenes with the Canes for a while, working with the youth, to now being in front of the camera, being that face all of us see somewhere between 40 and 80, got 80 times a season. And what was how did you approach that from day one, and what's changed to now?
Well, I think I was a little bit taken back, actually, how nervous I was the first time. I was on TV back with Chantel McCabe. It would have been the first time I was on the pregame show. But just, I think, seeing how much work is done behind the scenes, I think a lot of the credit now I give to our producers, the guys in the trucks, the guys with cameras and sound guys. They do such a great job of helping make the show what it is. Other than that, just being able to work with John and C. Tripp and C. Mike, and the amount of homework and amount of hockey you watch to know what's coming up. There's nothing worse than, you know, a question coming up or something going on in the game and one of us to give the token answer, right? The fans who are watching want to know the behind-the-scenes talk. They want to know what a player is thinking. So I think that is one thing that I've tried to work on, is give the player's perspective of why things are done or why they're feeling the way they are or what's happened on that play. And I think that's helped me. And then for me, I think it's been able to, again, what I just talked about the other players is not staying inside the box. Get outside the box. Be able to have fun. I've learned if you can't laugh at yourself, then who are you going to laugh at? There's things I say after the show. Even last night, I said, well, I just called him Turbo Teravainen on television, Mike. And he's like, well, everyone's probably laughing, same as you. So we have fun with it and kind of roll with it. But I think I've been able to build each and every year to feel more and more comfortable and talk about kind of exactly what's happening out there on the ice and give some knowledge and insight behind it.
I got nothing else.
I
want to respect this man's time.
Yeah, we're gonna let Shane go.
And I see empty glasses out here, so figure we can do some things to fix both of those.
We'll give everybody a break to get a refill. We are blessed to have John Forsland in this market.
Very.
Give us your favorite John Forsland behind-the-scenes story. John's great. John's given us some really good Kevin Dineen stories and some Jeff O'Neill stories throughout the year. But we've never had the opportunity to say, give us a behind-the-scenes John story.
Man, I think John is one of those guys that, I mean, he is so good at what he does. The two games last year when Tripp was under the weather and I actually did color for the whole game, to be in the booth with John and see how professional he is, but also to see how much he knows, not only about the Carolina Hurricanes players, but every guy in the league. Like, it is unbelievable the knowledge he has, the way he can see the game, the guys down there and what's happening. But I go back to, we talked about Justin Williams and the storm surge and how much fun these guys are having. To be around John, when you think, I remember the first time going into a meeting and thinking, you know, make sure I'm listening, dialed in. But to see how much fun John has in our pregame meetings, when he's up in the booth, sometimes I love it when they go to the camera of him in the booth. And, I mean, he's going crazy. I had someone text me from the New York Islanders who was in the box, who works for the team, was in the box, and they're like, what is your TV guy's name again? I said, John Forsland. They're like, he was having the most fun I've ever seen in the booth the other night. He just goes crazy in there. I think that's what makes him so good, is how much he loves the game, and his story is so awesome of where he came from. But if I give you the one tidbit behind that no one ever sees when we're doing our practice and stuff like that, and we're really just checking our microphones, John is one of those guys that always is, all of a sudden these noises start coming and we're like, what is that? And he's up there either kind of singing, I don't know if it's singing or making these noises and like imitating guys' names like he would never say on the air. But if Mike and I just start laughing down there, and it's almost like that icebreaker of like, okay, here we go. And then the cameras come on and it's John to a T. But I think that's the thing. He has so much fun behind the scenes. And I still, Mike and I talk all the time. I'm like, it would be funny if they could actually play what we're doing right now. But it may have to go to HBO some nights, but I think that's the thing. John and the voices and the sounds that he makes to prepare himself and be ready to go into John Forsland mode is probably the best thing about him.
Well, we are fortunate to have John Forsland. We are fortunate to have Carolina Hurricane Zone Shane Willis here with us today. Shane, thank you for being a guest here on today's
Thank you all, as always. Thank you all.
One of the raffle prizes we will be raffling off today is something I found. It is Shane. It is the lineup card from the Carolina Hurricanes' first ever playoff game, 1999, against the Boston Bruins. Shane Willis.
Yeah. I had a good seat in the press box that night.
Big part of the Black Aces that year. Rumor has it they had a lot of fun. We're not going to record that part. Maybe he'll tell you that over the beer. We're going to pause the recording. Let everybody get a chance to get a refill on their beverage, and we'll finish up Cheetos Never Win in just a minute. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Shane.
So if you weren't there, but you know you're playing along the play along game, this is the part where you pause the podcast, you get up, you refill your beverage, and Derek and I will be back in 3, 2.
Later.
All right, Derek, we are back. Thank you again. Hey, thank you guys for sticking around. Everybody get a fresh glass. There we go. So, Derek, I guess this is the part where we actually, because normally we would have, like, done an intro and then, like, done the theme song and then, like, gone to the guest, but we kind of started with the guest.
Do you have the Roots playing your theme song?
If only.
If only.
If only. Derek, let's, yeah, we've got, there goes Mr. Workrate. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only Mr. Workrate.
I'd also like to point out that around 2 o'clock last year was when they tapped the keg of the Bourbon Barrel Age 1050, which was when things started to get a little like they are now. So thank you all for enjoying the fine beers here at Bottle Mix.
Thank you to Bottle Mix. Thank you to the Caniac Realtor guest line sponsor, Dawn from Fathom Realty,
yes.
who made sure that we had Shane Willis here with us earlier.
I think she personally drove Shane here.
She probably did. Oh no!
Oh no! Check his heel.
That's in keeping with the theme.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening after the fact, we have a Yoni Pitkinen bobblehead here on the table that was holding up a T-shirt. Yoni Pitkinen fell. Currently has 2 broken heels, and we're probably not going to give him away in the raffle.
I really should have just blown the whistle for icing, and it might not have fallen.
Yeah. We'll have to change the rules for next year's podcast. Derek, let's talk a little bit about the trade deadline. It seems to be what's on everybody's mind. It's that time of year. Derek, who are the Carolina Hurricanes going to trade away?
Well, Mike, in 3.5 weeks at the trade deadline, they are looking to trade. I mean, Michael Ferland's gone, right? That's pretty much the worst. Not as of yet.
Reaction from the audience.
He's gone.
What? Shock.
Are we going to say goodbye to Ferland?
So, Michael Ferland is all but gone because it seems like he wants more money and more term, at least more term than the Canes are willing to give him. So it seems to be the worst kept secret in hockey that Michael Ferland is likely to be traded somewhere. My question on that trade is, who's going to want a guy on an expiring contract and is willing to give up and is willing to give up a player that we would want? Like Shane talked about, a younger guy with some term on his contract. That doesn't seem like that's a good matchup. So either he's got to be paired with a defenseman who might be traded, whether that's Pesci, Faulk, Hamilton, who I hope it's not Hamilton, or they need to be 2 separate deals because Ferland's not going to return that piece that Shane talked about that this team needs.
What? So let's do this. Everybody please stand up. Everybody who's here at the live podcast, stand up. Everybody stand up. We're going to do...
Are we going to sing My Bonnie?
No, we're not going to do this.
Okay.
But we're going to do a little test here. Everybody wants to re-sign Michael Ferland, right? There's a petition out there. There's this whole thing, you know, sign Ferland. So let's do this. If you're as long as you're willing to sign Michael Ferland to these terms, please stay standing. And this is kind of a poll of Caniac Nation,
so
Derek.
Okay.
If you hear a number you don't like, sit down and stay seated. Okay. So if you would sign Michael Ferland to 3 years, $5 million, please stay standing.
$5 million a year
for 3 years. All right, we've already had one person sit down.
Hey.
Okay. How about 3 years at $6 million a year? Okay. How about $6 million a year for 4 years? How about $6 million a year for 5 years?
All right.
So, Derek, as people who can't may or may not be able to see, no one was standing at 6x5.
Is that what he was?
Rumor has it the Michael Ferland negotiations, and rumors be what they are, starts at 6x6. 6 years, $6 million. I love Michael Ferland. I love his Canadian sensibilities. I hate that he liked the Pit barbecue because the Pit is the most overrated barbecue in all of
college. Whoa. And hear me out on this. Who rates the Pit highly?
Michael Ferland.
Well, okay.
Mike Maniscalco because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two people I trust with Eastern North Carolina barbecue, a guy from Buffalo and a Canadian.
Yeah. So,
isn't that the start of a great joke?
An Eastern.
That'd be like you and me judging maple syrups. I'm open to it.
Future podcast episode. Mike and Derek judge maple syrup. Hey, things are about to get bad. Can we judge it while listening to the Sports Channel 8 radio show Saturday 10 to noon?
Yeah, I think we'd have to be watching some SCTV while we do
probably.
It. Probably.
Okay. So, Michael Ferland, we all want to sign him, right? But the problem is term. Michael Ferland wants term. And as many have brought up, the Carolina Hurricanes are set up for success for the next couple of years because of the fact we don't have a lot of stupid contracts.
Who would you say is a stupid contract on this team right now?
I think one of the guys in the audience said Semin. I love that. I don't know if it's a bad contract, but I think the Jordan Stahl contract is currently a boat anchor contract. Again, I don't think it's going to dramatically impact us just due to length, but the Scott Darling buyout next season is also going to impact potentially what we're going to be able to see. We've got some, Pat Clark, noted curmudgeon Pat Clark, shaking his head.
It's not my business card.
It's collecting on the Slack channel right now.
Yeah. For those of you who may not be aware, there is a Section 328 Slack channel that...
how would they be aware?
They are now.
Well,
basically, after every podcast, there's a string of Pat Clark corrections of, let me tell you what you forget, what you missed.
Has it?
These updates are happening live. We will share them with the good people after this.
There you go. If you're here live, you'll be able to get them. But yeah, I don't think there's a lot of bad contracts on this team. But there's a lot of opportunities. Wow. There's a lot of opportunities to. Somebody just handed me a phone with the 328 and it says, hey, do you want more raffle stuff? Jealous. Let's see. Live correction. Joey Mormons. It's Joey Mormina. Never played for the Checkers, the River Rats.
I'd like to point out that Mike Flanagan just noted a typo.
That is one. That's good. That's good. Let's see.
There's no 10-50 in the house.
Is anybody having fun yet? Because Derek hates it. Anyway. So, Derek, who do we trade for? Mark Stone?
No. We're not gonna meet the price that Ottawa's going to want for Mark Stone.
Matt Duchene.
Woo! Mm.
Woo!
Yeah. So, we've talked about Matt Duchene. So many times, he's a player that I think would help this team a lot, and I wonder if the newer management, GM Voltron, likes Matt Duchene more than Ron Francis did.
It's a good question. Ron Francis, noted Matt Duchene hater, probably the reason he was fired, according to our very own Love and Hydrogen. but seriously, I don't know. I mean, because Otto is looking for a lot of stuff for Matt Duchene for a rental.
And here's the other thing. Matt Duchene supposedly is looking, or what, did Ottawa offer, or is Matt Duchene looking for 8x8?
They offered 8x8.
And he's like, nah, I'm good.
And he hasn't accepted it yet because Ottawa.
Right.
Yeah. But
8x8. But 8x8 for a guy who, because Matt Duchene is what, 26? 27. Yeah. I'm not going to want to pay 34-year-old Matt Duchene $8 million.
I think 8x8 is too rich for
Ottawa. That's not good. So if that's the kind of money he's looking for, that's not a trade I want to make.
So let's talk about this. What's the trade you want to make, Derek? Nick Bjugstad currently off the table.
Matt Duchesne, 28 years old.
28, thank you. Matt Duchesne, 28 years old.
Do you want Artemi Panarin?
Nah.
You know, because Shane said we needed, you know, scoring up front. You get a noted Russian scorer to maybe tie along to another future Russian Hall of Famer in Andrei Svechnikov.
Wow.
I mean, wow. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Okay, so you loved the idea 3-4 podcasts ago of trading for Vlad Tarasenko.
Did I?
You did. Anybody wants to go back and say, you're like, yes, you look.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I looked at the corrections department in the back. And
I am very good with getting Vladimir Tarasenko. It's just a matter of what is the cost to get Tarasenko.
What would you give for a Tarasenko for a Panarin?
Here's the thing. I know Pesci and Farland won't get that done, but we can talk.
Wait, they will get it or they won't get it?
They won't. Yeah, I mean, it depends on what draft pick would have to be thrown in, but you tell me it's a Pesci, Ferland, and a first for Tarasenko, done.
Reaction from the crowd. What happens if we hear Don Waddell say we have traded Brett Pesci, Michael Ferland, and the 2019 first-round pick for Vlad Tarasenko?
Yeah.
I'd want a second round.
Because here's the thing. You know it's going to be the 12th overall pick, right?
14th, but yeah.
14th, okay, 14th.
14th overall pick because
lucky, it's gonna be 10.
We're gonna get dropped at least a spot because somebody in that 11, 12, 13 range, they're gonna win the lottery.
That never
happens.
Yeah. So, Vlad Tarasenko, 5 years signed for after the season. 27 years old.
Nah, okay. There you go.
Yeah.
So Vlad Tarasenko.
7.5, so that's there you go. Too.
One of these days, we're going to get a producer for this podcast, and it's going to be good. Until then,
but again, for those who want to visit our Patreon page, we will still give you the sound checks.
Yes. So you look at Jimmy took his big play with the trade, Pittsburgh getting Bjugstad, Florida basically giving up, gaining a bunch of cap space. Are we going to see another dead trade deadline on February 25th? Because believe it or not, there have been 18 trades made since we've... the correction department is telling me there's been 20 trades made.
You could have stuck with 18 and just changed the date to be right.
Yeah. I blame Elliot Friedman because it was his podcast that I listened to. He was talking about this because we don't ever come up with our own content. We just take off everybody else. 31 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman, Jeff Merrick. It's a very good podcast. Listen to them.
Hey, still like an artist, Mike.
That's it. But there's been 20 trades now since we've come off of the holiday trade freeze.
Wow.
But it's been a lot of small trades. It's a lot of the trades have been one for one.
I mean, 11 of them have been Anaheim trading spare parts.
One of those trades was Nino Niederreiter for Victor Rask. Five goals in five games immediately. If I would have told you, Derek, we could trade Victor Rask for a guy we were going to immediately put on our first line, what would the reaction have been?
I wouldn't have believed you because I wouldn't have believed that we could have traded Victor Rask for a guy.
Yes. I'm sorry, that was just my Victor Rask reaction to that joke.
Sorry, I'm looking up Victor Rask's stats with Minnesota right now. He has two assists.
Yeah, the correction department, right again. Good follow from Minnesota Wild. I believe they're Evolving Wild. That is their SB Nation blog. Those guys do a great job. But they were talking about, was Victor Rask even in the game? And somebody responded, that's Canes fans every year for the last 3 years. One of those guys who has just kind of flown under the radar. But Nino Niederreiter.
Mm-hmm.
Has just been potting goals left and right. I think that's the trade Don Waddell's got to go out and make. He's got to go make another one of those trades for a guy who's somewhat under the radar. We're not going to get Stone. We're not going to go get Duchesne. I don't think we're going to get Tarasenko, but I think we get a second-tier guy who fits into this locker room so well.
Professor.
On the, on the TSN trade bait, I think there's only five centers. I know the guy I want, if we can get the if we could get him, would be Hayes, mm-hmm. out of New York.
I mean, he's a big boy, and that would be good.
Yes.
So what would you give up for Kevin Hayes?
For Kevin Hayes,
I mean, he's a 6'5 center. I think you could book him for what, like 45 to 50 points.
45 to 50 points. I believe he's got a does he have any term left on his contract? There, show producer, Mr. Workrate. No. So Kevin Hayes will be a UFA after this. So I would be perfectly fine. Here's what I'd love to see happen. Let's trade Michael Ferland. And let's trade Michael Ferland and Hayden Fleury for Kevin Hayes. Because here's the take, right?
No, I like it for us. I don't know why anyone would take those two pieces.
Here's why. Because you make the trade now, and you give the New York Rangers the ability to go out and get a first-round pick with Michael Ferland.
Why did New York need Michael
Ferland? They use him to retrade. Because Michael Ferland has more value than Kevin Hayes does at this point.
If someone is offering a first for Michael Ferland, we're the ones making that trade, though.
Yeah.
So I don't. Here's my question on the trade deadline, because obviously people talk about the defense that we have, and everybody talks about how we have way too many right shot defensemen and not nearly enough right shot forwards. On defense, the names that are always thrown out are Pesci, Faulk, Hamilton.
Right.
Of those three, who do you least want to see traded?
Oh, that's hard. I love the Dougie merch.
Mm-hmm.
I have been Faulk, yeah, for life.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really think Brett Pesci is a steadying force on the back end. And I look at what's coming down the pipeline. You've got Jake Bean. You've got Adam Fox. You've got guys who have that sort of ability who can, in theory, if they grow into their potential, replace what Justin or Dougie give us.
Okay.
I don't know if we have a guy in the pipeline right now who can replace the steady Eddie that Brett Pesci gives us. So I'm saying of those three, you trade Dougie Hamilton. Because I think Justin Faulk.
Is it because he didn't go out to Moxie's with you?
Aberration. I'm sorry?
Is it because he didn't go to Moxie's with you? You were left alone at that table just eating mozzarella sticks and no one showed up. The endless apps aren't going to end themselves.
So, is that a fat guy joke?
No, it was just a reference I could make.
So Derek, I ask you the question. I've made my trade. What is put on your mock turtleneck? Make a trade for the people. Are you making the Tarasenko trade? Is that your trade?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
Meh.
We already talked about it. We already talked about it in more detail.
I just wanted to say meh about your trade after you dropped the Moxie shit on me.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so I think we beat the damn trade deadline to death. You know what? The trade deadline
is
going to be a disappointment.
It's
the same thing that it is every year. It's going to be a disappointment. Here's the trade I would like to see. I'd like to see us trade for somebody on Colorado's first line. That's all I've ever wanted. I just want to trade for somebody on Colorado's first line. At one point, it was Joe Sakic. Now it's, you know, Landeskog and Rantanen. So I don't care. What else do we got?
I don't know. One thing I wanted to talk about is this delightful beer.
Yeah, we should probably talk about this delightful beer. So that
we should.
We can do that. Beer.
Yeah, everyone here enjoys beer. I know there are some people who enjoy wine a little more, and props to you. You may have noticed there are lots of wines available to consume, and they've got some good stuff in there. So, but beer-wise, I'm drinking some Modern Times stuff. And Bottle Mix, by the way, you may know where it's located. It's on Creedmoor Road, south of 540, north of Crabtree, right? You're here. So anyway, they're having a Modern Times tap takeover kind of event on the 7th of February. That's this Thursday from 5 until 7:45. It's the first time it's ever been on tap here at Bottle Mix. They're a really good brewery out of San Diego, California. If you don't know what San Diego means, you can Google it. But they're going to have some delicious beers on tap. They're going to have a hazy IPA, another IPA, a passion fruit guava goza. Yeah, right? So it sounds like some delicious stuff. This is the second of their IPAs that I've had. They've got two in cans up front if they're at the end of this stack. There's also some in a cooler that are delicious. They've got a hazy IPA, a juicy IPA, and they're both delightful. I'm not going to go into great detail about this beer because you can go get some out of the cooler, drink them here. You can buy some that are not yet cold, take them home, cool them, then drink them yourselves. But both have been absolutely delicious. I can't wait to see what they taste like on tap. And that guava passion fruit goza sounds just like a damn delight. So I'm enjoying this beer. I know Mike has another Modern Times waiting for him. That's some kind of like nitro coffee porter.
Have,
but you just had a beer that was, that was an adult beverage.
Yeah. So for those of you who what I believe to be the greatest beer of all time is Evil Twins Brewing's Even More Jesus. And I believe it is. They have a one here. It is the Un Jesus Day Cafe, which is basically coffee, Even More Jesus. It's a dark enough beer that no light comes through it.
It's gone right now.
It's still good. It's 12%. I'll have a couple more after the podcast. Stick around for that show.
That's why they call it Jesus.
Sponsored by Uber. Yeah. That portion of the podcast brought to you by your local ride-sharing app.
After that one, you're going to ask Jesus to take the wheel.
That's it. So, but they have so many great beers here at Bottle Mix. I love the way that the store is set up, so that way if you're like, oh, I like the stouts, they're kind of over here in this corner. Oh, hey, I like the juicy, hazy IPAs, they're over there.
That's a sentence you've never said. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Again, it's kind of like it's kind of like there's different wings of the store, and then there's a giant divide down the middle.
So people can just stand across the store, like one liking stouts, one liking hazy IPAs, and just yell at each other, yes. "You bastard!"
Yes. We'll do that later.
You're wrong.
So again, thank you guys to Bottle Mix. Thank you guys for buying up the beer. Section 328, beer of the week by the folks at Modern Times. When you come in, for the most part, as you come in the front doors of Bottle Mix and you turn to your left, it's generally right over there on the left-hand end cap. You'll be able to see the little Mega Man logo there. So, Derek, we've had a guest.
Yes.
We talked trade deadline.
Yes.
The Canes are good.
I'll agree to that.
Derek, the Canes are going to the playoffs.
Okay. Look, I
said it.
And Mike, going back to the Section 328 predictions, before the season, more of us thought the Canes would be in the playoffs than did not.
Derek,
now, if we took that survey, I think the results might be a little different.
Derek, if you go back and look at all of the predictions Section 328's done over the last 7 years of our existence, they're not good.
No,
they're not good.
No, they are not. Because last year we all thought Vegas would be the worst team.
Yes.
Well, not all of us, but almost all of us.
Not all of us.
Almost all of us. A plurality, at least.
Yeah. This year, I think we predicted the Islanders, Montreal, and Vancouver.
There was a lot of Ottawa.
If we need
a Lottawa, if you will. I assume all the boos are to be directed to Eugene Melnick, and I will forward them to him.
We have guaranteed you are a father now.
Straight up dad joke. Derek, you know, we should probably open up the mailbag and get some cheat mail. Gotta go get some cheat mail. Hey, does anybody here have, you know,
mail?
A cheat mail?
I think we got some mail.
Hey! Ladies and gentlemen, everybody's favorite cheat mail.
So you got a full bag now.
Oh my god!
Bag. Uh-oh.
I feel like we're on a Sesame Street segment here. This is fantastic.
Yes.
Also, how you
hey,
know
now,
I'm
Jim,
a dad.
Hey, come on up here. Let's get you in frame here, everybody. This is everybody's favorite letter carrier of Section 328. Derek.
Thank you, sir.
Derek, to the first of the cheat mails.
Yeah, this one was obviously typed up on a typewriter, and I love that.
Yes.
Because there's that little bit of ink bleed and fade. This is phenomenal.
There's
and
a ransom note inside.
Well, we'll see if it's written in lipstick.
Okay.
this is a missive. It's dated. This is beautiful. I will read this as written. February 2nd, 2019. Also, this could be from the Captain Andrew Luck account. Greetings and salutations, Section 328. Congratulations on the first anniversary of your second annual Live Cheaters Never Win podcast from Bottle Mix. Were you and Mike talking earlier?
Kismet.
Quote, bottle mix, if you buy a beer somewhere else, we will, we hope you step on a Lego. I hope Bruce is good with that. I have a lot of questions for you this week, so let's not dilly-dally and get right to them. One, dilly, Mike, dilly. Happy Groundhog's Day.
Happy Groundhog's Day, Derek.
F. Mary Kill, Bill Murray edition, Groundhog's Day, Ghostbusters, or Lost in Translation. So the Bill Murray edition of F. Mary Kill, Groundhog's Day, Ghostbusters, Lost in Translation.
Oh, okay. I am going, I am marrying Ghostbusters because Ghostbusters has been with me the longest.
Okay.
It feels like it is a good, solid, long-term relationship.
Okay.
God, I feel awful about this. I am going to have sweet, sweet relations with Lost in Translation. At which point, we have to kill the varmint.
Yes, you were really close. I am marrying Ghostbusters with you. I'm killing Lost in Translation. Not just because I've never seen it, but hear me out on this. What's kind of the premise of the movie Groundhog Day that the same thing happens over and over and over? You F that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you can raise up, this is Mrs. Wrestler is here, everybody.
I mean,
and scene.
And she's ghosted. Yeah. All right, number two. Will the touching video tribute to Bill Peters tomorrow be A, slow-mo footage to Sarah McLachlan, B, just showing an old Connecticut water commercial, C, a slow-mo Connecticut commercial to Sarah McLachlan?
Oh.
C.
I think we take it. Hey, folks, A, B, or C?
C.
C. The crowd has spoken. It is okay. C. Derek, here, let me hit a couple of these sections here. Question number three. Is Ned, that is Alex Nedeljkovic, ever going to get a fair XXX, because we had a typo, a fair XXX shaken Ned? So wait, are you saying, is he ever going to get an opportunity to play, or are you saying, is he ever going to get a triple X shake in the net? I think these are two very different questions that we need to get an answer to.
Ooh!
Opportunity. Yes. Okay.
The worst option of those would be he has to make a. The worst option of those would be he has to make a milkshake using a can of Molson Triple X.
That
would be the worst option. Yes, I think he will get a fair shake in net at some point. And when are we signing Mrazek? June 30th.
I think we signed Peter Mrazek before the trade deadline.
Okay.
I think we signed a goalie before the trade deadline. To give the team at least a little bit of continuity there.
So we missed the Shane Willis question. Our apologies. Mike, last question out of this missive. The Canes are 1 point out of the playoffs in the last game of the season and losing by one in the second intermission. Who from Section 328 do you send down to the fan tunnel to strip down naked naked as a J to shock or inspire the team into the third period heroics?
Wow. Roger, one of the OGs in Section 328, Roger, has volunteered his tribute.
My wife will be working that game, too.
Do we want that?
It's a great question. No, it really is a great question. So what member of Section 328 do you send down naked as a Jaybird?
No. They strip down when they're there. You don't send them through the concourse naked.
No.
That's too much for the people.
I'm dropping trial when I get there.
I mean, this man wears a kilt to the games.
Right. I mean, we've got... I'm just thinking... I mean, if we want to inspire the team...
Yeah.
I think I'm sending the guy who's going to just go for it. And while, you know, Pat would go for it and why Roger would go for it.
I think you're going where I'm going.
I think there's only one person who's going to go for it. That is the one, the only Mr. Workrate. Tom. I'm sending Tom. Tom's the guy who was willing to shave down completely smooth for the kids at the last... cycling event we did, raising money for the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation. If anybody's going to go for it, it's Tom.
You're very close, but you're talking about the wrong facial-haired gentleman. Dan in the Skinner shirt. I think would I think he would very much get into some kind of nude routine for the team. Yeah, I think there would be much more zeal with Dan in the fan tunnel. Yeah.
The suggestion was from the audience, me in the red velvet jacket that led to the December winning streak. The answer to that is no. Thank
all right.
You.
All right. Oh, no.
No.
All right, Mike, what you got?
Next cheat mail question. This one comes from our good friend Amy. She is at Rawl Specials, as in Raleigh Specials. Everybody say hi, Amy.
Now, hold on. Is that Raleigh Durham Specials? Because it's the same thing altogether? No. Okay.
No, just Raleigh.
Durham. I love Durham, but so, they're separate cities.
Cheat mail question. And yes, congrats on your second annual live event at Bottlemix. F. Mary Kill, Valentine's Candy Edition.
Ooh.
Cinnamon Hearts.
Okay.
That's Intamin Samplers, I believe.
Whitman
Samplers or Conversation Hearts.
Okay, I'm killing Conversation Hearts. Conversation Hearts are Tums that have been in a typewriter. I will F the Cinnamon Hearts because that is not something you want to just sit down and like mainline. The Whitman Sampler gives you a sampling of different things. While not the best chocolate in the world, you at least get a variety of things, and it's the most interesting of the three. Valentine's Day candy is not exciting candy at all. They are different things that are there as cursory items that you can just bring to someone to show that you have a modicum of consideration for them as a person.
I think you kill the Conversation Hearts. I think you kill the sampler.
You can't kill two.
I think it's not F kill. I think you kill the cinnamon, and I think you go to Bottlemix and you buy me a 6-pack of beer, and then I'll love you forever.
All right.
Last question. This one from our friend at Fuzzy Fur. I believe this has to do with the in-game entertainment from Kane's Vision. If you had to get rid of one, which segments are you getting rid of? Dad jokes or sock puppets?
Sock puppets.
I think that was pretty easy. I think it's the sock puppets because the dad jokes at least give us a little bit of the insight.
Yes. Yes. Dad jokes are entertaining. Sock puppets are not. So kill the sock puppets.
Yes. So before we close up this edition's cheat mail bag, do we have any cheat mail questions from the audience? Hey, everybody say hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Shut up, Tom. Get out of here.
Buy the merch, Mike.
Buy the merch.
Buy the merch. Cheat mail question from our own Mr. Workrate. Cheaters never pins very own Mr. Workrate.
We have our own podcast. Fun.
Yes.
Me and JC, we talk about the graps.
Who?
Yeah, I don't know. He's not here, so who cares? What?
Do you have a question?
You have a cheat mail question?
I thought you were asking me a question.
No.
I'm just getting out of the way of the people buying wine.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
And this has been the advertisement for Cheaters Never Pin. Right here in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. For those of you who are listening to the live podcast online, the great folks here at Bottlemix have already raised, just now about an hour or so into the podcast, over $300 for the kids. So thank you guys for everything that you've done. We're gonna finish up everything as we go off the air in terms of the raffles and the giveaways. You guys have been uber generous, and we cannot say thank you enough for all of that. And we really can't say thank you enough for everybody who's came out and supported us. This is now year 6 of the podcast.
I don't know, seven or eight
of whatever this thing is we do.
You've mentioned on many a podcast that we have concluded our Xth year. So
yes, it's we are in the middle of our 27th season. This little hockey family of ours is very important. For those of you, there's some folks who couldn't be here, some friends, fans of ours who have had rough days, weeks, years recently. We can give you a good bit of news. There's a loyal fan and member of the 328 family who got a clear cancer diagnosis as of yesterday. So thank you to them. I know they are listening. More folks are out there fighting it. But this little family has been everything to us. I know I met my bride at a hockey game. You took your bride to a hockey game and she still married you. We have this room of 40, 50 people deep here.
And I will say thanks to Bottle Mix, because when Camden and I went on our first date at a Hurricanes game, and also that story won me a team signed stick from the Canes, so that was cool. But our first game, the parking lot beer was Coors Light.
Yes.
Thanks in large part to Bottle Mix, we now drink much better beer at tailgates.
Yes, we do. And we have much better tailgates, and we have much better friends, and we are all better for it because all of you join us for shenanigans like this. So we say this a lot, but this is a blessing to have you guys do this with us. You guys are family. This guy's family. And we appreciate everything you guys do. We look forward to the April 11th. Tailgate.
Ooh.
When the Carolina Hurricanes play their first game of the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs. I called it today. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We have lots of stuff to do. We have lots of giveaways to get to.
I'd also like to point out real quick that Mike, while looking forward to a tailgate, is planning on taking consecutive Thursdays off work. So
yes.
We can't even have the first home tailgate on a damn weekend.
We're going to be a wild card, so it's going to start off. We're going to get game three, so it's going to be like Saturday, Monday, Thursday.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that I've planned this out, but I've planned this out, y'all. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Until next time, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
We're out of here.
Yeah!